ராமாய ராமபத்ராய ராமச்சந்திராய வேதசே ரகுநாதாய நாதாய சீதாய நமஹ. அயோத்திய காண்ட் சாப்டர் நம்பர் 63, தி கிரைம் ஆஃப் கிங் தசரதா. தி ரெசிடேஷன் பிகின்ஸ் நவ. When a muhurta later, Dasharatha awoke and was straightway caught by his sleepless foe, grief. It absorbed him quiet, like the bright sun slowly sucked in by the maws of the evil-faced Rahu, ever since the fatal moment when he drove the god-like Rama and Lakshmana to dread exile. It was the sixth day of his bereavement, and black night was fast coursing towards the confines of her realm to hand over her scepter to her bright successor. Dasharatha dragged forth into light from the dark closets of his memory the dread crime he had committed in years that were dead, and addressing Kaushalya all gently said, "Dear, I take it that your anger against me has abated somewhat of its fury. Hence, I make bold to tell you this. Everyone in this mortal world reaps what he sows, good or evil, inexorably and unerringly. It is a fool that stops not to inquire before he begins everything, if the results thereof be light or heavy, if the chances are in his favor or against. It is a fool who sacrifices much to gain a little. His brother is he who sets his hand to that from which no good accrues. It is the mark of a wise man to sacrifice a little and gain much. He savors of prudence who sets his hand only to that which brings him good. I dyed my soul black with the heinous sin of exiling Rama to the woods to gain a worthless trifle, to bring a smile to the lips of Kaikeyi. The wide world holds not another fool to stand by my side. There was once a lovely garden, and in it a palasa tree in the midst of a grove of sweet mango. Nature bethought herself one fine day to put on her flowered robe, and the palasa was almost invisible behind its bright garment of blood-red flowers. The mangoes put on their holiday garb, but it was dull and unlovely. The gardener came in and glanced at his trees. A wise man he was in truth, for long experience had made him sage. "My palasa," said he, "gives bright promise of a brighter future. Flowers so lovely are but the pioneers of lovelier fruits. Lo! Your mangoes with your somber peasant garb do but index faithfully the dull, insipid fruit they are about to bear. Now who but a fool would waste his time and labor on these mangoes that are a sorry foil to their fair palasa? He in his sapience uprooted the mangoes one and all and devoted his time and labor to the rearing of his favorite palasa. Another day, nature chose to put on her garb of ripe, luscious fruit. The man of wisdom went forth into his garden, where stood his palasa with ugly, ungainly fruit. Its gaudy tinsel garb of flowers had been stripped off its back by the inexorable seasons. He glanced at his neighbor's garden, whom he scarce deigned to remember as a fool. It was barely visible for the mango trees that studded it, bending low with the weight of the golden fruits and the swarm of the bees that clustered about them to drink the honey-sweet juice that flowed therefrom. Verily, none would like to change places with a fool in his disappointment and sorrow. Hence, I say to you that he who sets his hand to anything with a deep inquiry into the possibilities thereof would have to gather in a harvest of sorrow and disappointment, like the fool who reared up with infinite care his favorite palasa. I am that double distal fool who uprooted the precious mangoes and gave myself up to the rearing of the palasa. I watched with infinite care and solicitude over Rama's infancy, childhood, and manhood. But when the moment came for my efforts to bear fruit, I drove him away from the kingdom. There can be no surer sign of my folly than my useless grieving when it is too late. Haggard's carers believed that it was this very same Dashrath who deemed it a trifle to solemnly promise to crown Rama as heir apparent and forswear himself before the day was dead, who steeled his father's heart against love and pity, the better to consign his firstborn and best to the cruel forests. And all this for what? To win the love of that fickle, false-hearted Kaiki, who loved him not. In the bright morn of my life, when I was perfecting myself in the arts and accomplishments that became the future ruler of a kingdom, I was considered to be the master of Shaptavedana. Pride and conceit filled my heart to the brim, and blinded thereby, I perpetrated a deadly sin. Like a child that, in its innocence, drinks off the poison cup and writhes in agony, I was doomed to pay with my life the folly of my youth. As a rule, one's crop of karma, good or bad, is gathered in future births or other worlds, but my sin was unspeakably horrible. The driving force behind it made it bear fruit in this very life. Like the fool who, deceived by the bright beauty of the palasa flowers, revels in the imagination in a future harvest of golden nectarine fruits to match, I mastered the mystery of Shaptavedana and was blinded by the praise and fame lavished upon me thereby. But I heeded not the sin and the sorrow, the infamy and grief that lay in wait for me all pitilessly. Long before I sought your hand in marriage, when I was the heir apparent, the changing year brought round the winter rains. Men's blood begins then to course in hot lava streams through their veins, love and passion fanning them to a white heat. The sun drinks up the essence of the earth, scorches the world with his rays, and wanders off towards the south. Then he takes it to himself a holiday and disappears. Clouds, dark as night, come out of their caves and gladden the hearts of frogs, chatakas, and peacocks. Drenched with the showers and pelted with the arrowy drops, birds grope their way to the tops of trees heavy laden with rain. The lofty mountains haunted by elephants and rot are entirely hidden beneath the ceaseless downpour and present the appearance of a waveless ocean. The mountain torrents flow pure and unstained for some distance from their source. Later on, they turn red as they run through the earth, rich in ore of varied hue, like speckled serpents running through the ashes of a forest conflagration. At that time, I went out a-hunting in my chariot along the banks of the river Sariyu. I lay concealed a long while with senses on the alert, hoping by night to kill some buffalo, elephant, or tiger that came to drink at the river's brink. In the stillness of night, a sound fell upon my ears as of an elephant drawing water up its trunk. It was pitch dark so that you cannot see a hand a foot off. In truth, it was the sound of someone immersing a pitcher in the water. My heart beat with joy at the thought of bagging at the outset a mighty elephant, and I sped a sharp and cruel arrow like the hooded messenger of death to where the sound proceeded from. The new day was fast approaching. All at once a cry pierced my ears, the cry of a hermit who, struck to the heart by my shaft, fell down exclaiming, "Ah me! I am done for!" My victim continued to moan and wail in his agony. "Alas, I am a poor, innocent hermit. Never have I harmed any creature. I have no enemy in the world, not one. I came to this lonely spot to draw water, confident that no man or beast would frequent it. Who has shot this deadly arrow? I do not recall any wrong I have done to others. I am a nameless anchorite who had long ago left behind me any harm or injury to others in thought, word, or deed. I but feed upon roots and fruits and other woodland fare that I could get here and observe stern austerities. What have I done to die such a miserable death? What will my slayer gain by my death? A poor thing clad in bark and skins. Again, I ask myself, whom have I offended? Verily, who would praise this cruel deed that bears no fruit but an evil one? As well applaud the impious wretch who dares to violate his guru's wife. Not that I grieve to quit this frail body, but my poor parents, old, blind, and helpless, alas, what would become of them? Long years have I tended them, an only son. They would not survive me. What devil in human shape thus conspired to kill us all, father, mother, and son by a single shaft? Yet he is no better than a veritable fool and a slave of his passions that has perpetrated this foul iniquity. Stern allegiance to Dharma was ever the keynote of my life. When those heartrending words smote my ears, my bow and arrows dropped from my hand. Grief and fear, dark and terrible, enveloped my senses and mind and crushed them in their deadly grip. My feet were unconsciously drawn to the place whence these sounds proceeded, my heart sinking low at every step. A cruel sight met me there. A young hermit lay on the ground, writhing in mortal agony, his heart pierced with my arrow, his matted hair tossing hither and thither, while he flung his pitcher away from him and sought to escape from the dreadful pain that racked his limbs. His wasted frame was covered with blood and dust. After a while, his eyes fell upon me, shaken with terror and staring at him blankly like one possessed. He darted a glance of fire that might have reduced me to ashes on the spot and cried in a terrible voice, "Protector of men, a poor hermit I, a solitary ranger of the woods. What harm had you at my hands that you should pierce me with your venom shafts? Why have you struck me down? Who but came here to draw water for my aged parents? Maybe it is a sport to you to bring me down with a single arrow. But know you that you have sent to their death my father and mother too, hoary with age, blind and helpless. They are expecting me every moment, poor souls. I know not how long they would bear the pangs of cruel thirst. How have they stood me in good stead, my wide and profound study of the holy books, my ceaseless and stern austerities? Alas, my father is not aware of me lying low here, done to death by you, cruel king. Vain hope, feeble, tottering with age, what can he do, knowing? A proud tree riven to pieces by the merciless strokes of a storm, what succor can it expect from its lifelong neighbor? Dasharatha, be it your penance to take this terrible news to my father, else he will send you to perdition as surely as a forest conflagration consumes the dry and withered trees it feeds on. His hermitage is hard by. Take refuge in his mercy, that he may not launch his curses at you. The sharp-toothed arrow has sheathed itself in my heart and causes me intolerable agony, even as an angry current that brings down the sandy hillocks that bar its way. Do me a favor by drawing it out ere you go. He marked my hesitation, for to disobey him was to prolong his torment, and to obey him would wrench his life out of his body, and his death would at once invest me with a hideous cloak of Brahmahatya dosha. He saw death beckoning to him and turned himself to me with a painful effort. Dasharatha, do not give way to purposeless grief. Call up your fortitude to your help. You need not apprehend the cruel fate that awaits the slayer of a Brahmana. My father is a Vaishya and my mother a Shudra. And with his senses all unhinged, he writhes on the ground in fearful agony. Then I plucked out the fatal shaft. He stared at me with dumb terror in his eyes and quit this life. There he lay, drenched with gore and water, his heart yet palpitating with the frightful torment he passed through, and I wept aloud in nameless grief. मंगलम कौशलेन्द्राय महनीय गुणाप्ति चक्रवर्ती धनुर्जाय सर्वभौमाय मंगलम।